Issues, etc. Reformation Week begins October 18th. 5 days of Reformation-themed programs with some of your favorite guests. And here's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen. It's a special church bulletin insert for Issues, Etc. Reformation Week. Just go to the support page at issuesetc.org, download, print, and make copies of the Reformation Week bulletin insert. We have 4 different bulletin inserts for each time zone. Issues, Etc. Reformation Week. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's Tuesday afternoon, October the 12th. The story now involves a person who usually brings you the news. Former CNN anchor Rick Sanchez made some offhand comments about what is being interpreted the Jewish control of the media. It was read as in very bad taste and anti-Semitic. He was given his pink slip. That follows, of course, famous Washington journalist Helen Thomas making similar comments. How is anti-Semitism generally covered or miscovered by the mainstream media? We're going to be talking with Grad Greenberg, contributor to GetReligion.org and creator of the God blog, about that story and about an alleged sex scandal involving a megachurch pastor in Atlanta. Brad, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Thanks, Todd. It's great to be here.
You say that there's a lack of nuance in the media's general coverage of anti-Semitism. What do you mean by that?
Well, anti-Semitism is probably one of the more difficult subjects to insightfully talk about in the media, only because it's such a hornet's nest. I think as a lot of reporters are afraid of being insensitive to it, because it is very, very real and very pervasive. But at the same time, when something is deemed anti-Semitic, it seems to be rebroadcast and repurposed as such without really any sort of exploration of what that means, why it might be so. And the Rick Sanchez incident is a great example. Now, I think what he said was clearly anti-Semitic, but it wasn't entirely what he said that made it anti-Semitic, because there's nothing wrong, and we should be talking about in the media, I think from the positive and a critical perspective, the role of Jews in the media, why Jews have sort of risen to the level they have in the media. There's a very anthropological explanation for that, having to do with sort of the jobs that were available to them in the old world and what was easy to take with them, you know, professional skills they could move from persecuted place to persecuted place. But what was so wrong with what Rick Sanchez did was it just kind of came out in the sort of way that general racial scapegoating does. He just sort of, you know, voiced his general frustration about Jon Stewart and Jews like him who run CNN and all the big media outlets.
So how would you characterize the coverage of that so far?
Well, I mean, I think at this point the coverage has died down. I think part of that is because, you know, Rick Sanchez kind of disappeared. I mean, he had a very active Twitter feed that just went totally ghost after the day it happened or the day after. And the only, you know, he issued, I can't remember if he's issued an apology at this point. I'm kind of blurring he and Helen Thomas together because they were both so recent. But I think at least when I wrote about this for Get Religion, and when most of the coverage was happening on this, he had yet to really take any responsibility for what he'd said. And so I think that's kind of actually caused it to die down in a sort of natural way when these things don't keep being refueled. And Jon Stewart kind of, I think, helped that by making light of it that following weekend at a public speaking event. But in general, I thought the coverage was what I would have expected. It was a little reactionary, but at the same time, it was a little reactionary to before he was fired, but after the comments were being reported on. And then once he was fired, I thought there was some good exploration of why he was fired, but there wasn't a lot of good discussion about sort of the underlying issues he talked about. And not that I would necessarily expect that, because like I said, this is just a harder issue to dig into in a lot of reporters, I don't think, are entirely comfortable really. To be honest, this is a hard subject for me to talk about because my street cred is limited. And, you know, I think it's hard for even Jews who have experienced a lot of anti-Semitism to talk about because everybody has a different perspective on it. And a friend of mine who I used to work with at the Jewish Journal wrote what I thought was a very insightful blog post. And she writes the blog Hollywood Jew, which deals with a lot of these issues regularly. And she sort of concluded the post with along the lines of, actually, I can quote from it. It was the point that there's a difference between being anti-Semitic and being offensive or insulting. For what it's worth, Rick Sanchez seems to be as confused as to what constitutes a bigot, referring to his comment about Jon Stewart, as Jews are about what constitutes anti-Semitism. So, you know, you kind of have this, if Jews can't agree on what's anti-Semitic, and that's very understandable because they all have, again, different experiences, how do the media know how to deal with it?
What about the ability of the media to distinguish between comments or statements that are anti-Israel, that is, anti-Israeli policy on this or that,
yeah,
and generally the Palestinian situation, and anti-Semitism?
Well, I think the media probably does a better job of that than large segments of the Jewish community and other parts of the American population, just because I think the media is more susceptible to seeing things in political terms than they are in racial terms. So they don't necessarily see criticism of expanding settlements or continuing settlements or terminating the moratorium on settlements in the West Bank. They don't see that as necessarily being anti-Semitic. But at the same time, it often can be difficult to see. And if we talked about, like, let's say we talk about, you know, I've attended to cover the Palestinian Awareness Week at UCLA and UC Irvine before, and sort of common images are, like, you know, bloody, torn Israeli flag. Now, that flag has the Star of David on it, and that's an inherently Jewish symbol, but it's also a political symbol that represents, a nation. And so with that bloody flag, is that anti-Semitic? Is it referring to Jews as butchers, or is it referring to the state of Israel? Now, whether or not you agree with the criticism of Israel, there's a big difference between saying it's referring to just Jews broadly, whether they're in the diaspora or they're in Israel. Referring to them as just their nature being sort of this continuing blood libel. That's very different than saying I disagree with or the state of Israel has policies that I think should be criticized.
Let's talk a little bit about another story that, wow, I mean, you point out that CNN has been working overtime on the story, the alleged sexual molestation involving Atlanta megachurch pastor Bishop Eddie Long. What attracts the media to a story like this?
Well, I mean, you know, there's a lot that attracts the media to a story like this. I mean, I think that sexual abuse stories, whenever they involve figures of authority, get coverage, but they never seem to get quite the coverage when it's, you know, a high school volleyball coach or a eighth grade teacher as they do when it is a pastor. You know, we saw this with very needed coverage, and albeit a little late, of the Catholic abuse scandal, but we've seen it too with Ted Haggard and sort of the what was seen as the hypocrisy of his life, and, you know, him being a major leading evangelical figure and the mistakes he made. But what I thought made the Bishop Eddie Long story so unusual was he's not a national name. I mean, he's big in Atlanta and he's big in the African American community generally. But most people, I would even say most religion reporters outside of Atlanta or outside of the African-American community had never heard of him before. The only reason I had was because I had read a few stories that had been written about sort of his pushing of the gospel of wealth, which really sort of dug deep into the fact that, you know, here was a guy who was getting rich, and this was 5 years ago, but was getting rich off his charities, was driving around in a Bentley, was living in a multi-million dollar home. Those aren't things that I associate with being a minister, and what really got me with him was his response to the prodding questions about that, which was he made a comment about how he's not just, you know, a little African American preacher on the corner. You know, we're not just a church; we're an international corporation. Well, I don't see the church as that, but not even a big church as that. But so that I think that's what made his story a little more interesting, was sort of his identity. But the big issue, I think, often with these stories is the apparent hypocrisy. And that was definitely something that was seen here because he was, you know, he had spoken out against homosexuality and the people who had accused him in these lawsuits of, I don't know if it was molestation. It's not clear. A lot of things have not been clear from these lawsuits as to, I mean, I haven't gotten a sense from the stories, at least, as to the age of the boys. I believe they were teenagers, but I don't know if they were in the age of majority or if they were the age of, you know, consent, or if they were, you know, under 16. That's not been clear to me from the stories I've seen. But the general theme that here's a guy who railed against homosexuality, and here he is, you know, allegedly involved in, you know, sexual activity with teenage boys, I think is what drew people in. A colleague of mine had an interesting theory, though, about what may have been driving this story specifically even a little more. And the reason that first, you know, CNN is in, and they were the ones who broke the story, and actually the guy who wrote that great investigative piece about that, you know, looks into Bishop Eddie Long's Gospel of Wealth and his living the ministerial high life, actually now he worked at the AJC, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution at the time, but he now works for CNN. And so CNN broke this story and got it going, and then the AP kind of jumped in on it because they've been, those two, now that CNN's more than just the cable news network, those two have been battling a lot over sort of being the first to get stories out and the first to keep stories going. And I think once that got, you know, out into the national consciousness, at least the national media consciousness, the other big boys thought they needed to jump in and cover this because obviously it must be a big story. And it even carried on. I think Daily Times didn't really pay much attention to it until I believe they had a story just this weekend, which kind of retrod the same ground. But so the story kind of keeps going, and it keeps going, I think, in part because of this apparent hypocrisy and in part because of the fact that, well, if the other big papers and big media outlets are covering it, well, I guess we got to, too.
When we come back, we'll get a few more minutes with Brad Greenberg of GetReligion.org, creator of the God blog, talking about that alleged sex scandal involving a megachurch pastor in Atlanta, Bishop Eddie Long. Then Craig Hawkins will join us for the remainder of the program on this Tuesday afternoon, October the 12th. We'll talk about a mass wedding ceremony, not hundreds, but thousands, and if you count the people all over the world that were watching this and participating via satellite, thousands of people married by the Reverend Sum Young Moon, founder and leader of the Unification Church. Why do they have these mass weddings? What does it mean? Why is it so important? And who do the members of the Unification Church believe the Reverend Moon actually is? Craig Hawkins, founder of Apologetics Information Ministries and former co-host of the Bible Answer Man radio program, will be our guest in just a few minutes. On the other side of the break, I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. We'll be right back.
In a world awash with all sorts of information, opinions, and ideas, there is still a place where God's Word is the central and only focus. Messiah Lutheran Church, 801 North Madison, Lebanon, Illinois. At 9 o'clock on Sunday mornings, God's people gather there to listen to Him. There you will find His words of law and gospel, and of course, our Lord's Holy Supper. Bible classes focus on the Bible and the Lutheran confessions. Come, listen, believe, and live, and check out our website at messiahlebanon.org.
Do Lutherans just follow the teachings of Martin Luther? How is Lutheranism similar and different from historic churches like Roman Catholicism and Eastern Orthodoxy? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October is Lutheranism 101. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase Lutheranism 101 by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Is it possible to be evangelical and Catholic? Lutheranism 101.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Another adult stem cell breakthrough.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Adult stem cell research, which, unlike embryonic stem cell research, does not result in the destruction of a human embryo, has produced therapies for 73 different ailments. Among these are Parkinson's, cancer, sickle cell anemia, multiple sclerosis, spinal cord injuries, and heart damage. Now comes news out of Italy that medical researchers have cured dozens of partially and fully blind people using adult stem cells. Researchers took cells from the patients and transplanted them to their damaged eyes. Of the 107 eyes treated this way, 96 regained their vision.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. Brad Greenberg of GetReligion.org is our guest for just a few more minutes. Then we'll be talking about the Unification Church, the Reverend Sung Young Moon, and a mass wedding ceremony held over the weekend all over the world. Craig Hawkins of Apologetics Information Ministry will be our guest. Brad, I want you to pick up where you left off there on, you say that the word controversial when it comes to this case of Bishop Eddie Long that is chosen by the media is really just a very poorly chosen word.
Yeah, I just don't see it as controversial. I see what he is accused of doing. If it did actually happen, I see that as, you know, if we want to use biblical terms, I see it as wicked. You know, I see it as sinful. I see it as just plain flat wrong. I don't see it as controversial. There's not a lot of debate about whether, and especially these kids were under the age of 16, there's not a lot of debate about whether or not that's an okay thing for a minister of a megachurch who's married to be involved in sexual acts with teenage boys. That doesn't strike me as controversial. It just seems like a word that as a reporter, I've always been really wary of using. Because anything can be considered, often anything can be considered controversy, just as anything can be considered arguable. But it's usually not a precise enough word. And I think in this situation, actually, it doesn't work at all.
So do you think that's a reticence on the part of the mainstream media, or perhaps a tendency to focus on controversy over against the actual accusations or crimes that may have been committed?
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. I mean, it also allows for reporters to be a bit more imprecise, which is sometimes an asset. I just think that here it says the wrong thing.
Brad Greenberg is contributor to GetReligion.org, and he's creator of the God blog. Brad, thanks for being our guest.
Awesome. My pleasure, Todd. Thanks so much.